Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, welcome to the Shame Free Zone. This is your host, Veronica Monet. I have a really fun guest tonight. Her name is Mimi Donaldson. Now, I actually met Mimi in Los Angeles about 3 years ago. We were both taking a financial workshop together, and I would fly down there once a week, every week, for about 3 months. Mimi was actually my workshop partner, and I got a real kick out of her. She's very high energy. She's got a great sense of humor. And she's actually got a very sophisticated background. She actually has taught leadership at Harvard University. She's got a master's degree from Columbia University, and she used to be the human resources specialist at Walt Disney Company. She since has moved on to author several books, and as a matter of fact, she's got a Negotiation for Dummies book that she co-authored, which has sold millions of copies. But tonight we're going to be talking about her brand new book called Necessary Roughness, New Rules for the Contact Sport of Life. Mimi, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone. Thanks for joining me here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
I understand we almost didn't get you because you were busy watching Monday Night Football.
Well, it ended 1 minute before the phone rang. So I was so excited because they were in overtime and I didn't want to miss a second.
Oh, my God. And forgive me, I'm one of those women who does not track football at all. So who was playing and who won?
It was the Baltimore Ravens at the Houston Texans. And the Ravens had it, you know, they were ahead by like 21 points most of the game. And then as happens in the fourth quarter, which is why I love football, the losing team catches up and they tied the game with 10 seconds left. So they went to overtime. And then there was an interception that led to a touchdown that won the game. I mean, all the exciting things you could think of. All the dramatic plays of football that I tell women to look for were in the last quarter and overtime.
So, and we're actually going to get to this. I know your book, Necessary Roughness, has actually got a lot of tips for business. And I think that connection maybe is a little easier for people to make. But you've actually got quite a few things to say about bridging that gender gap between men and women.
Totally. That is one of the reasons I wrote the book.
Well, let's back up a little bit, though,
okay,
before we get to that. And by the way, we've got a lively discussion going on Facebook right now. I'd actually posed the question, what can football teach us about relationships?
Oh, you know, fabulous.
We had quite a few people weigh in on that. But before we get to all that, I want to actually go back to your childhood. So I was reading in your book about a very interesting story where, I guess your family used to watch baseball. You weren't into football, and you would cheer for both teams?
Well, I was a girl, a real girl, who did not play competitive sports. In fact, I always say my family didn't play contact sports. We played string quartets. And it kind of summarizes. Mother said football was too rough, and no one in our family played it. And we were baseball fans. But because Dad's hospital, he was a doctor, was on the south side, and we lived on the north side of Chicago, we rooted for both the Cubbies and the Sox, which no one ever does. I mean, you're either a Cubs fan or a Sox fan in Chicago.
Totally.
But We rooted for both, and I think what you're referring to is my horrible fear of the fact that someone was going to lose.
Right. Well, I guess there was one seminal day in particular. Your yeah. father said that he's either going to be a hero or he's going to be a bum.
That's what he said, because that was a last batter up, and there were two outs, and it was a clutch time of the game of baseball. And my dad muttered under his breath, that guy's going to be a hero or a bum. And my little brother went, yeah, because he loved it. He loved that someone was going to be a hero or a bum. And I hated it because I wanted everybody to be happy and to win. And I didn't want anyone to be a bum. And that's about as much as I knew about competition back then. Boy, have we come a long way.
You have come a long way, but let's not get ahead of the story here. Because then the next thing that happens is that you're playing on a pool table, I guess, and you're getting quite good at it, and your mom comes in and watches you play
yes.
table pool, and she's upset.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was the next thing, the competitive thing we did, is we had a bumper pool table in the rec room, the recreation room, which was kind of the basement, but not really. It was open. It was the family room downstairs, but my mother was standing on the steps, and she was watching me beat all the boys, and this was in high school. And she was shaking her head slowly, and I knew something was wrong, but I was winning, so I couldn't imagine what was wrong. And after the boys left, they loved coming over because she would feed them cookies, and she was great and funny. And after they left, I said, Mom, what's the matter? And she said, you've got to stop beating the boys. And I said, what? I was freaking out. I was like the first piece of bad advice Mother had ever given me. And I said, what do you mean? My eyes filled with tears. And I said, you mean let them win like Dad used to let us win at checkers when we were little? And she said, well, if you keep beating the boys, they won't like you. And I used to tell this story to hundreds of women in women's conferences, and I would leave the last part of the sentence blank, and I would look out at the audience and go, Mother said, if you keep beating the boys, they won't. And then I used to turn the microphone over to the audience, and all the women would chorus, like you.
Mm-hmm.
And now, no, I don't even tell that story anymore in class. But it was very important to put it in the book because I think it shaped my not competing for the next 15 years or so because we knew very well in the training departments at the Fortune 500 companies that I was a trainer at that the male trainers were making more than the female trainers, even if the female trainers had their master's degrees and extra experience, and we just sort of shut up about it, and that's kind of letting the boys beat you.
It absolutely is, and I know that at this point the culture has shifted enough that there's quite a bit of competition. Actually.
Oh, it definitely has. I mean, women are coming out of grad school with men and starting jobs more money than the men, and it's different.
It has changed a lot. There's also a lot of female fans of football nowadays, but then of course the football I think they changed their approach so that they started having more female announcers and
oh totally yes, and females are more appreciative of the roughness of football because after Title IX in the early 70s, females were allowed to play professional sports, competitive professional sports. And so then you had your role models. You saw your women tennis players and your women golfers and your women, basketball players in the WNBA, but even college. I mean, they're just so competitive and they're so good. And the interesting statistic that I put in the book that I found out right before I went to publication was that those women who are Fortune 500 CEOs say that, 80% of them say that the number one reason that they achieved in the workplace was because they played competitive sports.
Wow.
Now, I didn't play competitive sports because I was, you know, I didn't want to sweat, and I was before that whole Title IX thing. But I tell women, you know, it's time to compete, and it's time to learn some lessons from eyeball-to-eyeball confrontation, the thing that we don't like to do.
Well, certainly, the you know, even though the culture has shifted in a lot of dimensions, women are still only making about 75 cents to the dollar.
Yes, and that's an improvement
and
over 50.
Most women are doing about 2 extra weeks of work every year.
Oh, yeah.
In the form of housework.
Yeah, they do everything. They do everything. And part of the reason is that we say yes to doing everything.
Okay.
And so one of the lessons to learn is to say no. And to learn how to delegate, in that, to learn how to, that some things are not worth doing perfectly, and that sometimes you need to assign things to people that are just worth doing adequately.
Right, like maybe even delegate some of that housework to the kids.
Yeah, does that have to be done perfectly? I don't think so.
No. Oh, it's true. It's true, and I think a lot of guys don't want to do the housework because they feel like they're working for their wife, you know. It's like she's coming along going, oh, you missed a spot.
Oh, now we could talk for a show about women who have guys doing stuff for them and then criticize how they're doing it.
Right.
That
right.
is an absolute no-no. Men hate that. If they're going to do it for you, you need to let them do it their way. It's kind of like when they give you a gift, some women aren't just looking, oh, they got the gift. They should be happy because they wanted that gift. No, they wanted the guy to think of it himself, or they wanted him to get it a certain way, or they wanted him to get it sooner, or they nitpick, and the guy just wants appreciation.
Oh, that's actually valuable lesson number 8 in your book. You don't make a big deal out of the mistakes. You save that energy to celebrate the successes.
Oh, gosh, did I say that? That's pretty good. Yeah, no, I mean, men's needs, as you are the expert at, are so different from women's. Women want to be listened to. Men want to be appreciated. They want you to say thank you for stuff they do.
Well, actually, my expertise is in looking at how similar men and women are. And,
yes.
But I do absolutely believe we grow up in different cultures, and those cultures definitely shape us to have different sensibilities. Let's go to the wall on Facebook and see what a couple of the comments are here. To that question, what can football teach us about relationships? Most of them are humorous here. Tamara says you can't make a touchdown if you don't run with the ball.
Now, there you go. I have a chapter called Time of Possession, and you need to carry the ball to make the points. And how many of us are so frustrated by people who go, oh, it's not my job, and they don't want to carry the ball? Well, if you want the glory in life and the points and the love and the recognition, you got to carry the ball. You've got to be responsible.
And how does that translate to a relationship between a man and a woman?
Well, you got to step up to the plate. Well, I'm using a baseball metaphor.
A baseball term now.
I know, but you got to carry the ball. In other words, you've got to be responsible. We women have to be responsible for telling men what we want precisely.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that is, I see a problem with that all the time with my clients, that women have a hard time saying what they want.
Yeah, because they think that it's romantic if men read your mind. But I have a chapter called Hinting, It's Not Romantic. Because it's not. Men don't want to read your mind. You see, they don't have that value we have. We love reading people's minds.
That's so interesting. Meredith Chivers actually did some research out of Canada.
Really?
This last year. She was on Oprah, That is the number one female fantasy, is that a man will somehow or another intuit
yes.
How to sweep you off your feet, when to do it,
yes.
and a woman wants to be taken, but not by the wrong man at the wrong time.
Yeah, yeah. They're real particular how the man does it.
So,
and it's I just say that's really silly.
Well, it's certainly difficult. I think it puts it, and then on a gender that usually doesn't specialize in a lot of intuition, at least not culturally. So,
no, it's not their value.
Yeah,
they don't value that. We value that. We love intuiting.
Our friendships are very much based upon that.
Very much.
So Matthew says, so far as I'm concerned, there's nothing that football can teach us about relationships. That's coming from a man.
Oh.
Noah Lena says, to make a pass and try four times?
Well, let me tell Matthew the most valuable lesson, and he will absolutely agree, because men give me standing ovations when I tell this story. Men want women to have a short memory. And you can learn that from football. And here's what I mean.
Yeah, please explain that.
It's called short memory. It's one of the most brilliant things in football. I was watching football with my boyfriend in my 20s, and I wasn't a big fan, but he said, if you don't watch with me, I won't be coming down on weekends from Milwaukee. And I lived in Chicago. And I wanted him to come down. I said, oh, I'll watch with you, but you have to teach me how to watch, because I don't know. And he did. He taught me how, you know, the different plays and all during the commercials. And we were watching one Sunday, and the whistle blew, and they went to commercial, and Joe caught me wiping a tear. And he said, Meme, what? And I said, oh, Joe, that's my very favorite part of football. And he said, what? And I said, well, one guy from one team knocks the other guy down from the other team really hard. And then the whistle blew, and he reached his hand out to help him up. And Joe said, what are you talking about? And I said, oh, Joe, it was just so sweet. And he goes, Meme, it was not sweet. The whistle blew. The play is over. He was reaching his hand out to get him up again so they could start quickly. It's efficiency, not compassion. And at that time, I did not laugh. Now I laugh. Now everybody laughs. But back then, I felt a bit sad. The whistle blows. The play is over. Now, here's what men want women to know. Each moment is a new moment of now. Don't drag the past into the present. When the whistle blows in football, the play is over. Each player respects the finality of the play before. For instance, and I tell this to women because sometimes the only game they watch is the Super Bowl. Well, the Super Bowl 2 years ago had a quarterback who threw a pass at the very last seconds of the game to win the game to a wide receiver who dropped the ball. The wide receiver comes running up to the quarterback again and says, give it to me again. Throw it to me again. Now, did the quarterback say, well, I don't know. You didn't catch it a moment ago. How can I trust? No. The quarterback said, yep, got it. And he threw him the ball. The wide receiver planted his toes in bounds, fell over, and you've seen this replay thousands of times in slow motion because that touchdown won the Super Bowl. Each man respected the finality of the play before. And that's what football can give to relationships, because men are always complaining that women drag, they don't have a short memory. And I'm always telling women, if you can't have a short memory, then just shut up. Because not every brilliant idea that comes into our head has to come out our mouth.
Well, it's actually an interesting point that you're bringing up, because I certainly have experienced that in my own relationships of, you know, like saying, well, remember this thing you said
yes.
last year?
Yes.
and getting that incredulous look like, I said, what? Why would you even remember that?
I know.
But, you know, you make this application to business, and I know we're going to talking about relationships here, but I'm interested in the gender differences here. So
yeah.
There's a comment that you made in an article. I guess this is racingtowardsdiversity.com. You said male lawyers have long fought each other vehemently in court, then
yes.
gone out to lunch together as friends.
Yes.
Female lawyers are just beginning to do that. They do it much less than men.
Yes. And that's the whistle blows. You see, women, one of our biggest strengths, and I don't want us to lose this, is our ability to make connections. We are fabulous managers and nurturers of people because we can find connections where there even aren't any. We are brilliant. But sometimes we have to learn how to compartmentalize. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
And
I do. This
connect.
Has been a big frustration of mine with women. I think men go out and they might even, like, you know, two men might have, one of them might, you know, accidentally, quote unquote, have sex with the other one's wife or something, and still somehow or another they can shake hands, get
yep.
up, go make $1 million, build a bridge or whatever.
Yep. It's amazing because
yeah.
they compartmentalize. Now, freedom is choice. I believe in having lots of behaviors, having lots of ways to be. Sometimes it's good to connect. Sometimes it's good to compartmentalize. And the reason that women lawyers don't go to lunch together after they've killed each other verbally in court is that they're still connected to the court.
Right.
They can't let go of it. And so, but more and more, they're telling me, and I'm doing lots of research and surveys, that women are starting to learn how to compartmentalize, and we can connect as well, which gives us options, which is really
right.
what you're striving for.
Oh, it is. I have a column, actually, over on Sex Is magazine, that's my whole focus is on trying to cross-fertilize the two genders.
Yes. I totally am with you on that.
Because taken by themselves, the male culture and the female culture are both kind of limping along.
Limping.
Yeah.
And in the 80s and 90s, I taught men how to be more talkative, to be more open and give feedback, because women like to talk. They bond through talking. And now, here it is in the 2000s, and I wrote this book about football aimed at women, and now I'm telling women, compartmentalize. Use less words.
Right.
Don't confuse men.
I know. I do an exercise with couples in my office where oftentimes I'll sit them right across from each other, and I'll look at the woman, and usually her face lights up, and the guy's looking down at the floor, and I go, by the way, this is considered confrontation in male culture. Like eye-to-eye contact, face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
You two put two men in a room with a hidden camera, and they usually assume right angles to each other.
Interesting.
Yeah. So let's read a couple other little comments here. They're kind of fun. I like Richard. He says, again, the question being, what can we learn from football about relationships? And Richard says that people really don't have to set up such elaborate rituals to touch men once a week.
That is a scream. Well, I tell women, my favorite part of football still is at the end when the opposite teams get together on the field and ask about each other's wives and kids, I think, and, you know, really renew some friendships they've had for years, even though the other guy's on the other team. And yeah, there's a lot of touching going on, and now there's more crying. Men are, I think, have a softer heart and are willing to let it be seen. For instance, the Hall of Fame induction ceremonies, which I say women will enjoy this, even if they don't ever watch football, because the men are very moved and acknowledging, and they acknowledge all the people that have helped them and all the people they've ever known in their lives, practically. And it used to be that once in a while, one of them would cry. Of the 6 or 7 inductees, they would be moved to tears, usually by their son in the audience or somebody, you know, the first coach they had in high school. But now They cry they all cry. And they take bets about who's going to be the first to cry.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes.
So John Boehner's got nothing on them, huh?
No. Oh, no. Just in the last 10 years, men are really not embarrassed at all when they thank people and, you know, times like the Hall of Fame induction and stuff like that, and even after the Super Bowl when Drew Brees was holding up his little boy and there were tears in his eyes. No shame anymore. No shame. So, yeah, I think as your dream of the gender lines blurring, I think that's happening.
I think it is, too. We actually have a comment here from Susan who says, I look at it as a way to note gender differences. Men seem to value teamwork and competition, strength, skill, strategy. Not big on my list of fun, energizing stuff as a woman. I'm glad they handle that so I don't have to. So maybe you have something to say to Susan about...
Well, no, that's okay. If Susan, I'm serious, if she's home raising the kids, at more power to her. Let her warrior husband go out there and make the money and have the big confrontations and do the tough stuff. But my target audience is the women who either have to or want to have successful money-making endeavors, and then they're going to have to get out there and compete.
Yeah.
They are. And there's so many two-income families that... Women are, you know, having to work. They've had to work. And now, just this year, the statistic is that women have most of the wealth, a little over 50% of the wealth of this country. We've just passed 51%.
Are you kidding?
No.
Wow.
In other words, the single-family homes that are headed by women, they have more money now.
I guess that means we're going to see more beefcake in advertising.
I would think so. And there are more house husbands raising the children now than ever before, because this new generation of men grew up with working moms, and they don't find anything wrong with the woman making more money than they do. Whereas in my generation of men, and probably in yours.
Oh, yeah.
There was a sort of a shame. You had to make more money than the woman.
No, absolutely. When I was married, my husband was older than me, and he had a real problem with the fact that I was making more money than him.
Yeah.
And then when I got divorced, I started dating younger men, and I was, you know, it was interesting to find they had no problem with it at all.
Yes, no problem. And people like my nephews who are in their 20s, they have absolutely no problem. Yes, they're ambitious. Yes, they want to have satisfying and lucrative careers, but they certainly want to marry some smart, enterprising woman. It's tough now because, you know, they want a smart woman, but they don't want a workaholic because they want someone who will stop and raise her children. And that's okay, too. I mean, there are women who can do, you know, work and stop and raise their children and then start another business, which a lot of women are doing.
Most women wind up doing that. But, of course, that does account for some of the wage discrepancy, too, because they've interrupted their work history.
A little of that, yes.
Yeah.
A little of it.
So you have an interesting here where you ask, why do men ask, how long will this take? And I really can't wait to hear your answer to that, because I heard that all through my marriage. How long will this take?
Yes. Now, this has been misinterpreted by women who sometimes think that if a man asks how long will this take, it means he doesn't want to do it.
Well, I just,
No.
Exactly.
No, it doesn't mean that at all. Now, here's what it
means.
Tell
us, Mimi, tell us.
This is probably the most valuable part of my gender differences presentation, which I've won lots of awards and stuff doing it for thousands and thousands of people in the audience all at once. And men have written in that it's the most valuable part of this. And it happened by chance. I discovered this from my own observations and then research. Okay. Men regard their energy differently than women. In other words, men want to know, how much energy do I need to allot to this activity so I won't run out? And they actually estimate in their minds, this will take an hour and a half of energy. And they want to be able to keep that energy up without running out of energy or losing face or losing control, because men think they lose control when they're out of energy. Now, it is very different for women. Women hardly think about their energy. We get it from everywhere. We get second winds. We get third winds. We don't run out of energy. When we finally do, it's so lovely. It's a pleasurable feeling to finally run out of energy. And you know this because if a woman's tired or exhausted, she will call another woman to share this experience. And she will say things like, I am so exhausted. I cannot move another muscle in my body. Notice the pleasure and relish in her voice. It's almost sensual.
Yeah.
It's almost a release of control, and we love it. And the other woman will share in the pleasure, and she will say, oh, I can't believe it. You out of energy. Wow. And my laugh line is,
I've had these conversations, maybe.
I know you have. Every woman in my audience has. And my next comment makes the men go crazy, because I say, that's women. Can you picture a guy calling up another guy and saying, hey, I'm really tired? Never. It would be a loss of face. Men will never. In fact, ladies,
okay,
the only person he will tell that he is out of energy is the person he loves. And that's how you know he loves you.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So your guy was just
asking. This has to do with saving face and not losing face.
Not losing control. And
yeah.
And I tell women, if he asks how long will it take, say 30 minutes, take 20. Say 20 minutes, take 15. It's like coming in under budget. It builds trust.
Interesting. But come on. Isn't there a little bit going on there about not actually wanting to have a conversation because they're out of their element? This is something.
Oh,
all
if it's a conversation. Oh, that's different. See, I'm talking about an activity. So the woman says to the guy, please take me shopping or please come with me to the ball game or whatever. The guy says, how long will it take? And, you know, when's it going to be over? Da-da-da. That's to find out how much energy he needs. Now, if a woman says, let's talk.
Emphasis on the talk.
You have to understand.
Yes.
See, that's how women talk. Men talk in little spurts. Men use less words. It's researched. Women use about 25,000 words a day. Men use about 15,000. My laugh line is, by the time he gets home, he's used all 15,000 up.
Yeah,
we haven't even started on our 25,000 because we've had to be efficient during the day. So then we want to talk to him because women talk to relax and rejuvenate. Well, men don't. In fact, our kind of talking is exhausting for them.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen that.
Yeah.
I've seen that. Now, that doesn't hold for all men, but the vast majority, yeah.
The vast majority, when you say, honey, let's talk, he goes, wait, I need to unwind too. Let's read in different rooms together. Because he wants
different
to
rooms
read
together.
Yeah, because reading is focusing, and he relaxes by focusing, and women relax by unfocusing, and he wants to read in a different room from you so you won't share what you're reading. See, we don't like doing one thing at a time. And we want to share. We want him to go, what, honey? And we want to read it to him.
Oh, see, there, I think I'm more like the men. I'm like, stop interrupting me.
Okay, good. Well, then you're... That's lovely. You have options.
So why do women use more words? That's a really interesting
because
concept.
We use words to bond. We use words for different purposes than men. Men use words to get things, to get results. And they use as few as possible to get results because they don't want to exhaust themselves. They want to conserve energy. Women talk to bond with people. We talk to connect because that's a need we have. You see, that whole stress thing of, remember, fight or flight? Well, men wrote that. When you're stressed out, you either fight or you run away.
Uh-huh.
Well, men wrote that. That's not women behavior at all. The women at UCLA did a study a couple of years ago about what women do when they're stressed out. And what they do is tend and befriend. In other words, they either tend things like go out into a garden and take care of that and weed, or they tend to a baby or another needy person and sort of gets them out of their funk.
Uh-huh.
Or they befriend. They call up a buddy and they talk about the stress. And it lessens the stress for women to talk about it. Well, guess what? Men think that talking about a problem actually exacerbates the problem or makes it worse.
Because you're drawing attention to it, I suppose.
Yes, because you're dwelling on it. Men don't want it. They just want to solve the problem and move on.
Oh, there's a good quote, actually. I've heard that. Why do you want to dwell on this?
Yes. Why dwell? Because basically men think that talking about the problem makes it worse, whereas women know that talking about the problem lessens their stress. And it's, there's no right or wrong here. It's just that men fight or flight, women tend and befriend.
You know, it's interesting that you bring up that whole, you know, science, quote-unquote, around fight or flight.
Yes.
And most of us really have just kind of accepted that at face value. But actually, I can think of some instances, even in nature, you know, as apart from human culture, where that really doesn't apply.
Exactly.
I'm thinking about the bonobos, which is an ape that lives in the Congo, which is known for its peacefulness, and
uh-huh.
It's a very sex-positive animal. And they don't fight, nor do they flee.
No.
They usually make love, not war.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that really isn't the only model going on the planet.
No, it's not. And ever since this study came out a few years ago from these women at UCLA, it's gained a lot of credibility because women have said, wow, that's true, because, you know, we don't have to believe the stress research that was done in the early part of the century that was only done by men.
Right.
And
right.
So interesting. So, because really there weren't any women scientists back then, and now there are.
Thank God for that. So we are starting to expand our knowledge base as well. A couple more comments from Facebook here.
Oh, it's so fun to
be Nyla with says, always wear your helmet.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Hokey Wolf says, takes a team to win.
It does take a village or a team to win. It really does. And that's one of the things that draws me to football, is that it is so team-oriented. I mean, they wear helmets. It's not an individual sport. You can hardly tell what they look like. It's wonderful.
Except for those butts, which is the only part of football that I actually pay attention to.
Fabulous butts. Well, that's what I tell women to get it, how to get into football. Step one is watch the spandex.
Yes.
There are, you know, it's a whole chapter on how to watch football and eventually learn to love it. And step one is there are a bunch of guys in their early 20s at the peak of their physical prowess running around in spandex.
What
could be better? It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And you can really think of it as ballet because they stretch out for impossible catches, and then they always replay it in slow motion.
Oh, and, you know, I'm really not a football fan. I'll sound like one in a minute, though, because I think about, like, Jerry Rice.
Yes.
And Joe Montana.
Yes.
On the field for the Niners, when they were together, it was pure poetry.
It's poetry. Yeah. And I fell in love with the back of Jerry Rice's thighs.
Okay.
Those were my first thighs because my boyfriend at the time, again, a guy got me into football, and this was in the 80s, and Neil was a 49ers fanatic because he was from Palo Alto originally. And here we were in L.A. going up to Candlestick Park, up north, and then we would stay here because we had the Rams and the 49ers would come here to play. And I was just really into Joe Montana and Jerry Rice as well.
Oh, yeah. They were just, it was just the whole, the way that they would, you know, work together.
Yep.
That part is really missing from female culture. I think the whole idea of working together expertly so that neither one of you is actually taking all the glory. It's the team that counts.
Yes.
What do you think women can do to bring more of that team mentality into their own personal lives and their professional lives?
Well, I tend to think of women as all my sisters. I mean, it was kind of my big reason for ethics around men, not taking another girl's man, not having lunch even with a married guy unless we were, you know, discussing business. It just kind of informs my integrity that I think all women are my sisters, and so how can you compete? And if you've ever had a really, really best friend, which I always have had in grade school, high school, college, even now, my best friend is from graduate school, and we're still best friends, and it's 30-some years later. So, I mean, you just sort of have that loyalty, and you've
but
done things
you
together.
You'd have to admit, Mimi, though, that is a very, that's definitely female culture, the idea of loyalty and having a best friend. And yeah. Those are actually kind of, I think, not quite the whole team thing. Remember, we were talking about how men can kind of fight dirty, and then they turn right around and go out
and have a beer. Yeah, that's that compartmentalizing thing.
Yeah,
to get
female culture to that point, I think it's going to be a stretch in some ways, but it's going to be a necessary step if women want to actually be able to accomplish something. Because somewhere along the line, it seems like that women do end up feeling somehow or another betrayed.
Oh yeah.
I'm not the special one, and then the friendship is over, and teamwork never even enters the playing field.
Yeah, yeah. We need to separate. I mean, I've been able to work in companies with my best friend, and as, you know, co-workers. And, you know, business is business and friendship is friendship. But,
what do you think a tip for learning how to compartmentalize would be?
What do I what?
A tip. Do you have a tip for our listeners on how women could learn how to compartmentalize?
Yeah, I always say, remember you have an internal whistle. In other words, blow your internal whistle. Stop the action. Before you bring up the thing he did last time, and he comes to you and he says, I've cleaned out the garage, and the word finally springs to your mind, blow your internal whistle and don't say it. Bite your tongue. Stop right there. Do not say finally. Because that will ruin what he just did for you. That will ruin your thank you.
I think that would ruin a thank you for any gender.
For anybody. And that's what women do sometimes, is we just say that thing that's in our head instead of blowing our internal whistle and thinking, is this going to be good for the relationship if I say this word finally?
Yeah, I think all too often, I know for myself, when I was growing up, I was in the kitchen where the women were, grandmothers, aunts, mother. The men were out in the living room, and I would hear the women talk about how men are just overgrown boys, and they don't, you know, have a lot of common sense, and so women have to, you know, kind of try to help them be all they can be. And I, you know,
unpaid jobs.
Yeah, it was the whole focus was on manipulating the man.
I know.
Without him knowing it.
We've come a long way. Now men.
Not so much though, Mimi. I mean, because I'll tell you, it has a different fabric to it. It's not so obvious. There's still an awful lot of 20- and 30-year-old girls running around out there who are trying to make over their man. They want him to be something different than what he is. And still coming, I very much with this motherly energy of trying to control or correct or otherwise supervise the men in their lives. And I see it all the time.
I know. I tell them that mother-son dynamic.
Work.
Yeah, the mother-son, that's not going to work for love, is it?
Oh, it kills the sex life in a heartbeat.
It kills sex, because.
Yeah. So you talk about something called the mute button. You want to tell us about the mute button?
Well, the chapter title is my favorite chapter title. It's The Mute Button and Other Male Fantasies. Because men really love the mute button. They wish they had one. For certain conversations that they don't want to listen to.
I think Adam Sandler had a movie about that.
Yes. I did not see that movie because I was, I had the pause button analogy. But, yeah, it was kind of like that.
It was funny. He was using it to rewind and pause.
Yeah, I know. I was afraid to see it because I did a stress book at the time. And we had a whole control panel with a pause button and a rewind. And it was before the movie came out. And I thought, oh, my gosh, if I see this movie, I will quote from the movie instead of from my book. And I'll be influenced by it. And I don't want to steal anything. You know, I wanted to remain purely it my idea. But, it's a big idea of a lot of people. So, yeah, the mute button is different, though. The mute button is something I discovered on afternoon television covering sports. It's a show on ESPN called Around the Horn, and it's the show that scores the argument, is what it says, the show of competitive banter. Because men love games and competing, even when they're reporting on sports. And so there's these four news sports writers from different newspapers around the country who are very well-spoken. It's a very interesting show. And there's a host. And if he doesn't like what the person is saying, he mutes them. He uses the mute button. And all the other guys laugh because they love it when one of the guys is picked on. See, guys love to roast each other. And women will never roast each other. We just won't do it. But they love, you know, making the other guy, you know, one-upping.
Oh, yeah, teasing.
Yeah, and so when one guy gets muted, the other guys laugh, and it's, like, really funny.
Oh, interesting.
And so I thought that was an interesting concept that they even – and the host assigns points if he likes what the guy's talking about, just randomly. I mean, it's all arbitrary. But men respect the rules so much that no one ever argues with the host. Just like in football, no one argues with the referees. I mean, sometimes the coaches throw challenge flags, and then the referees review the play. But mostly, you go with what the referee says. And this is what life is. This is necessary roughness. You have to abide by the rules of life. You can't expect people to change them for you. And that's really important to learn if you're going to be successful in life. And so the mute button is this thing that, you know, I don't say it should be legal in relationships. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, you need to respect and listen to each other. But just knowing how men love to play games and get points and respect authority and rules, I think that's interesting. And I think that women can learn from that.
So it's not so much that the man has a fantasy of hitting the mute button on his wife?
No. But, you know, I don't even talk about that. But I do say that men want the bottom line and that they don't want to have to figure out what you're saying. I talk about the energy thing and the fact that men don't like big, long stories. They always ask you, what's the point?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, and that's because they have limited amounts of energy to listen to big stories, and words are not the same for them. They're not
culturally. Yes, I would have to agree that that's certainly not the case.
Yeah.
So, would you advise women to maybe, in the interest of cross-fertilization of the two gender cultures here, maybe women could learn how to be a little thicker skinned and take a little teasing?
Yes. No. The teasing thing. No, I don't think I would never want to do that. I think women, the way we acknowledge each other and make each other cry because we acknowledge each other so much in a meeting, that's just better than roasting each other. I mean, it's just women. I don't want to change that about women. But I do want women to realize that you don't want a glazed over listener. And if you can tell that the guy really wants to mute you because his eyes start glazing over, then get to the point. You know, in, you know, respectful requests, which I'm sure you talk about in couples therapy, is respectful requesting is really the key. You know, the guy can say, honey, I'm tired. Can you just bottom line it for me? And, you know, sometimes women can ask that too. Can you bottom line it? Or the woman can say, honey, I really want to tell you the whole story. Will you listen to the whole story? And the man will say yes, because he loves her. And
I ask couples to actually negotiate when they're going to have their conversation.
There you go.
And for how long.
That's
and I
it.
I also advise them to use a timer and stick with the agreement.
Respectful request.
Yeah.
And that is the way to communicate, no matter if it's gender or whatever.
No, it's very important, and especially
in love relationships.
Yeah, the communication styles are different.
They
culturally.
Are. You need to just know that, you know, somebody's not going to be like you, but they're okay.
Yeah,
they're okay.
Whatever anatomy you've got, you know, definitely. If you have some sense of whether or not you relate to the masculine or feminine culture, it kind of gives yourself and the other people in your life some idea of where you're coming from. You know, we're almost out of time here. It's been awesome.
Oh,
I'm
stimulated. I hope I can get to sleep at some point.
So, well, we need to get you really exhausted so you can call up a girlfriend and tell her how wonderful
it
is.
Oh, no. Talking does not exhaust me. No, talking, I could do that forever.
And you do it very well. Mimi, tell our listeners how they can get a copy of your book.
Oh, you're so adorable. Well, if Amazon is your favorite way, you can do that. And if you love Kindle, it's on Kindle on Amazon. If you want an autographed copy, go to my website, mimidonaldson.com, and I will send you. There's PayPal set up there, and everything's safe. And I have a little shop, and I sell my books and tapes. And then I will send it to you autographed.
And if you happen to be on Facebook and you're one of my 4,000-plus friends, I posted Mimi's website to my wall. So
oh, and I'm on Facebook, too, and Twitter. And I tweet about football, and it's really fun.
Oh, I'll bet it is. I'll bet it is. And what if they are interested in booking you for speaking? I know that's primarily what you do.
Oh, sure. Website is great. You know, booking Mimi is a whole, what do they call it, a link. Booking Mimi, it's got everything. And you can watch my TV interviews on CBS and Fox, and you can listen to radio interviews, too, on the homepage. There's all these obvious links.
Very cool. And next stop, Oprah, right?
From your mouth, girl.
Okay, I'll keep my fingers crossed for you.
Thank you so much. You are a wonderful interviewer. This went so fast.
Oh, you're a total delight. You're easy to interview. Thanks, Mimi.
Thank you.
Look forward to the next time you and I are in Marina Del Rey together.
Oh, let's do it.
All right, good night.
Good night.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Sering kesepian.